Okay, so the great sages are continuing with their discussion with the Vaikunthavasis. The sage said, "Who are these two persons who have developed such a discordant mentality, even though they are posted in the service of the Lord in the highest position and are expected to have developed the same qualities as the Lord? How are these two persons living in Vaikuntha? Where is the possibility of an enemy's coming into this kingdom of God? The Supreme Personality of Godhead has no enemy. Who could be envious of him? Probably these two persons are imposters. Therefore, they suspect others to be like themselves." Okay. So it's very, very easy, you know, we were doing this, taking these stories and making them into ISKCON stories. And so, of course, it would be so easy. Great book. You could just do one after another to, like, you know, describe this and, you know, different peoples to four Jehovah's Witness children come to the Hare Krishna temple and like this and that, and somehow or other, you know, the Sunday feast, you know, the receptionist won't let them into the temple, and they see the altar, they see the devotees dressed in saris, and they see the kirtan with the beautiful music going on like that, and they start to curse the receptionists like that. Yeah. So this is a little dialogue here, a whole little drama. And if we go on, you look at a little background here, get our perspective, you know. Of course, we're getting all of this by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya comes and gives, you know, Harinama Pradam Devam. He and Lord Nityananda are giving the holy names. And giving the holy names in the mood of such a high realization of the Radharani's separation from Krishna. Yeah. And, of course, Lord Chaitanya said, Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless representation of the Lord. And so he of course, was engaged in the kirtan of the holy names, but also relishing Srimad Bhagavatam, profoundly, along with Srupa Damodar Maharaj and Rai Ramananda. And they would even take these verses and just chant them as japa. You know? Yeah. So this is Lord Chaitanya. He's showing us how to take up this, Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, his Chaitanya Charitamrita we take is like a Srimad Bhagavatam class. Okay, and then if we go to Srimad Bhagavatam, then with the whole basis, the whole thing starts on it. Once upon a time in the forest of Naimisharanya, a great assembly of sages headed by Shonaka Rishi asked Suta Goswami, you know, about what is the essence of all dharma, what is the purpose of the incarnations, and specifically what is the purpose and the benefit, you know, to be gained from the Krishna, Ramakrishna incarnation. You know? So he then describes basically the pedigree of the Bhagavatam, you know, its value. And of course, if you are a scholar of the other Vedic literatures, if you wandered through those to get to the Bhagavatam, then you can appreciate more the specific pedigree and position of the Bhagavatam and Shonaka and other people like that. You know? And so he explains all that pretty much in the first two cantos, and citing the circumstances under which it was spoken, with the disappearance of Bhishma, appearance of Maharaj Parikshit. And then he describes how Sukadeva Goswami spoke it to Maharaj Parikshit. Like that, and then how Brahma spoke it to Narada, and how Brahma himself heard it, like that. So he goes all the way to the parampara, back to Brahma, and then Brahma's realization of Mahavishnu Loka. But finishing the second canto, then the sages, they ask, what about Maitreya and Vidura? They had some discussions. You mentioned that because they're param stitam, yeah. Because they want to know about the higher position, because the position of Mahavishnu has been revealed with detail. So different Christian organizations, they may have some idea and some degree, other groups like that, even if we go to India with, you know, Vishnu Tattva, South Indian Ramanuja, different sampradayas, you know. But then this realization of Krishna in Dwarka, his higher thing. Yeah. So that's what they want to hear about. So then they, you know, they're introduced to how Vidura and Maitreya met. And then Maitreya then begins to start with the beginning with Sarga, Visarga. And the Visarga leads us to the creation of the Manus. And Manu, he's going to create everything else. But of course, the problem is that he can't, you know, get down to a grosser level of consciousness to the point of actually having any kind of stimulation in biological reproduction there, because there's no place to go down to. The earth has been kidnapped. So, of course, that's a question of how the whole earth got kidnapped, and then how Lord Varaha came and saved it so that Manu could go on with his work. But, of course, this digresses us to the story of where Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu came from. And they came from the pregnancy of Diti in the evening, and she tried to restrict herself, but finally they were born. Then, of course, there's another story behind that. So we're digressing. It'd be nice to see this all as one gigantic PowerPoint show or something. Probably what it would take is something like, it'd be nice. I'm sure you could do it. It'd be a wonderful project, you know? Do it on a full screen, you know, but probably bigger than a television set. Probably you'd have to have a full projection screen, maybe like, you know, 30 feet by 40 feet or something wide, you know, like that, to have it all there. And then kind of give it in such a way that we could see the stories within the stories within the stories, you know, like that. Because it has a very responsible structure to it, you know. And to my German mentality, that would be quite pleasing, satisfying. You know? But in any case, we're digressing, and then maybe Madan later on will tell us about how behind the... of course, there's a story that the giant Vijaya, they were cursed because Lakshmi cursed them. You know, so that was happening. But he says they also were appreciated that Krishna had a desire, you know, for a good fight. You know, so from one perspective, we're considering this, that actually Krishna does enjoy the material world. And he does want it to exist. He does enjoy it. He does have a good time, and he enjoys all the things that go on here, you know, in our perspective like that, because he's only an enjoyer. So everything that comes from him has to be enjoyable. Interesting, material world. But in any case, we heard this story then about, as part of this, is that Jai and Vijay and how they were cursed. And of course, that they were cursed because of the story with the Kumaras, like that. Okay. So then we have come to this point where the Kumaras are stopped, and then they make their own analysis of the situation in three verses. So today's verse, of course, was the first part of was this a whole analysis? Yeah. Or something like that. Yeah, okay. That they're mentioning this fact that the how can there be duality in the material world and spiritual world? These guys maybe are imposters. So they continue with, in the Vaikuntha world, who's speaking? Will be Sanat Kumar? In the Vaikuntha world, there is complete harmony between the residents and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay? Just as there is complete harmony within space, between the big and the small skies, why then is there a seed of fear in this field of harmony? These two persons are dressed like inhabitants of Vaikuntha, but wherefrom can their disharmony come into existence? Therefore, let us consider how these two contaminated persons should be punished. The punishment should be apt, for thus benefit can eventually be bestowed upon them. Since they find duality in the existence of Vaikuntha life, they are contaminated and should be removed from this place to the material world, where the living entities have three kinds of enemies. So, of course, this whole story is very, very good for analyzing this point about, you know, how we develop this kind of material consciousness, and to what degree is that actually useful in terms of eliminating that consciousness. So let's go ahead here. So they're making a declaration. These guys are seeing duality. These guys are contaminated. There can be no duality in Vaikuntha. Everybody's in harmony with Krishna, you know. Nobody's envious of Krishna because Krishna doesn't have anything that anybody wants. You know, everything he has, he's the most renounced. He's the biggest giver. Yeah, anything he has that nobody else has, he's trying to give it away. So if you want to be God, okay, here, I'll arrange it, you know, and I'll go with you. We can try it out. Let's try it out, you know. I want to be daddy. Okay, come on, let's go. You can be daddy, yeah. And so in some ways, like when you look at the whole thing when it's all over, because there's no distress in the material world. There's no happiness in the material world from the one respect. All there is in the material world is happiness distress. You can't separate them. You can't be suffering from being whipped by some people unless at the same time you have a background of what it's like to have your prana and your skin in a pleasant condition. You know, so Socrates said the same thing. It's like a two-headed god, happiness and distress. So in the material world, all there is this duality. You know, the two are side by side. So there is no distress in the material world, and there is no happiness in the material world. So whatever there is from a spiritual perspective, that's something else to be considered. Okay, let's go ahead here then with the purport. Okay, the Prabhupada says, the difference between the inhabitants of Vaikuntha planet and those of a Vaikuntha planet and those of a material planet is that in Vaikuntha, all the residents engage in the service of the Lord himself and are equipped with all good qualities. It has been analyzed by great personalities that when a conditioned soul is liberated and becomes a devotee, about 79% of all the good qualities of the Lord develop in his person. Therefore, in the Vaikuntha world, there is no question of enmity because between the Lord and his residents. So I was becoming a devotee. I thought, well, what is this? You know, we're insignificant, and so the Lord's qualities are unlimited and infinite. So how can we develop 78% of the good qualities of the Lord? So, of course, what it means, that I figured out, is that it's described that Krishna has 64 principal qualities. And some of these are not manifest in Lord Brahma, but they're manifest in the Lords of Vaikuntha. Okay, they have specific qualities. And then beyond that, Krishna has four or six specific qualities that nobody else has like that. You know? So out of these 64, there are 50 expert in languages, expert judge of time and circumstance, you know, expert dresser, fluent in all languages. We can develop these all, you know, to a certain degree. So if we developed all 50 of the qualities, we have 50 of the 64 qualities in a tiny quantity that Krishna can have. So that is 50 is 78.125% of 64. So usually I think Prabhupada says 78%. Okay. So we can develop all, and Vaikuntha, everybody has these, you know, so on. And so, again, complete harmony. Yeah. Here, in the material world, the citizens may be inimical to the chief executives or heads of state. Okay? So this is one point, because of this sannyas discussion that was going on. This is one thing in terms of sannyas. People say, well, you shouldn't take sannyas because, you know, you'll get all this artificial or superficial respect, and it will inflate your ego, and you'll fall down because, you know, you're getting all this respect from people like that and stuff, and you'll become arrogant and proud. And Madame was quoting, make his point about, you know, exchanging obeisances with people who offer them to you, and different ways to keep from becoming artificially, you know, puffed up. You know, but there's another side of this too, is that when you adopt this position of being a sannyasi and getting everybody offering you food, clothes, respect, whatever, you know, then of course you become immediately the target of envy like that. So if you're not a sannyasi, you're wandering around, you don't have people offering respects to you, but at the same time too, you're not wandering around, we're like so many people, Patty is speaking, in the material world, you know, to some degree everybody's going to have some envy of somebody else, some stupid degree. know? And so therefore, you're getting this, you become the object not only of artificial respect, but also of envy. One second. And this also serves to control, the pride and stuff. Because if you are becoming artificially proud, and then, oh my goodness, then the envious people, wow, they can really have a great enjoyment then, satisfaction to see, oh, to see this person, he is artificially proud, so on. Yeah. Okay. Citizens may be inimical to chief executives or heads of state. But in Vaikuntha, there is no such mentality. Yeah. One who is not allowed to enter Vaikuntha, one is not allowed to enter Vaikuntha unless he has completely developed the good qualities. Yeah. Yeah. The basic principle of goodness is to accept subordination to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So say Shantaras, right? Shantaras is the basis of everything else. The sages, therefore, were surprised to see the two doormen who checked them from entering the palace were not exactly like the residents of Vaikuntha. It may be said that a doorman's duty is to determine who should be allowed to enter a palace, the palace, and who should not. But that is not relevant in this matter, because no one is allowed to enter the Vaikuntha planets unless he has developed 100% his mentality of devotional service to the Lord. No enemy of the Lord can enter the Vaikuntha lokas. The Kumaras concluded that the only reason the doormen's checking them was that the doormen themselves were imposters like that. So I couldn't quite figure this out because, their duty is to determine who should enter and who shouldn't enter. So then it seems that the doorman should be there to make his responsibility to check and see if, somebody has developed 100%. And if they haven't developed 100% of the good qualities, then they should not be allowed to enter, so on. So it's a little confusing to us that they were, they should be allowed to make this judgment like that and so on. I think, yes, okay. So that's the purport. And here we see, it was a Sanatan Kumar maybe is, trying to criticize the Vaikuntha, Vajai and Vijay. And looking at them later on, they will become who? They'll become, maybe on the left, he'll become Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha. Imagine that, Then after that, they become Ravana and Kumbhakarna. Then they become Shishupal and Dantavakra. Yeah. Then they become Jagai and Madai, like that. Yeah. So adopting, but we can understand too that they weren't their Vaikuntha power, was still kind of manifested. Again, because if Krishna wants to fight with somebody in the material world, who can fight with him? Yeah. So they were extraordinary demons. They were really big demons. We can see, of course, recently when they were Jagai and Madai, that Chitragupta, the record keeper of Yamaraj, couldn't keep up with their activities and all the kinds of different reactions they were supposed to be receiving like that. Yeah. So it's kind of simple. A simple point that by Vaikuntha and the spiritual world is free of dualities. Everybody is naturally in cooperation. It's not artificial. Not artificial. Their cooperation. The example is given the small sky and the big sky, but you can also give the example, the cooperation between the middle of the rope and the rope, like that. Or the cooperation between the corner of the room and the room. There's no meaning to the corner of the room unless there's a room. There's no meaning to the middle of the rope unless we have the rope. So there's no meaning, to devotional service unless Krishna is worthy of that service. Yeah. This is non-different. You know? So this kind of consciousness is this total harmony. It's totally a natural situation like that. You know? And so then Jai and Vijay, and this is something I don't exactly understand, their consciousness, because it seems to me that they were at the gates of Vaikuntha. And so the idea that somebody's got to make this discrimination. Of course, we say that Durga, you know, Durga is testing us, you know, testing us to see how qualified we are, like that. But then beyond Durga, she goes to what? To this marginal position with Sadashiva, you know, quite high. So is it above that locus? Is it above the locus of Sadashiva that we start coming into the different gatekeepers? And why are there 7 gatekeepers? You know, there wasn't some necessity here, you know. And then different, it's not that maybe that, you know, maybe you can pass different gates and then stay there and get reformatory or purificatory activities to become more purified before you go. Because, of course, there's a material world, and Gopal Kumar, he leaves the material world, and he goes to the seven coverings. And each of the coverings is 6 times different, bigger than the previous ones. So we go through, what is it, earth? Well, you know, each one is more potent, you know, like this, stronger. So when he was going through the covering of earth, he saw Bhumi, and Bhumi was worshiping Varaha. Varaha was the predominating deity, and Bhumi was the predominating worshiper. And she asked him to stay and engage in the worship of Varaha. And he was appreciating, wow, it was very, very nice, you know, very, very nice, you know. So, for example, we may have like a very, very wonderful attachment to our particular deities and looking at them, maybe like, you know, a nice 18-inch tall Radha Krishna deities and dressing them, or in our temple, and in San Diego, Radha Giridhari, you know. But still, we're appreciating, wow, there's this conception, because I still have some kind of conception of Krishna as a metal statue, like that, and so on. So I still have some kind of conception of Krishna with some material contamination, even when I've left the material world exactly, now I'm going through the coverings. So Gopal Kumar could appreciate that he had to go beyond that. And so going beyond that, then one no longer actually sees the deity as having any material or metallic form in that sense, but actually can see directly the son of Maharaj Nanda and can see the pastimes going on and everything else like that and so on. Yeah. So it's kind of our comments here. Of course, there's this whole point about Zanyas. Maybe talk about that a little bit. And the Kumaras, they are sannyasis. Yeah. And here's the point that Prabhupada says that the, practically speaking, the saffron cloth was a passport in Vedic culture to go anywhere and to ask anybody for anything. But here's another point in favor of the gatekeepers, because the 4 Kumaras weren't dressed in saffron cloth. Yeah. No. Yeah. So the saffron cloth, Vedic culture. Now, that's within Vedic culture. Now, there are so many people, you know, using saffron cloth for so many things, and they're exposed here and there. But in Vedic culture where it's there, then there is a good testing of the people that are wearing it. You know, in Thailand, at least before, I knew people who were like, you know, very much involved in the culture. They had like a whole monastic culture, Varna Ashram situation. They have Pattaya Beach, which was a whole area for, you know, for prostitution, okay. But it was very regulated. It was all within one area and was carried on in a very enjoying, playful spirit, kind of like Las Vegas, I guess. You know? In other places, it wasn't going on so much, you know. And then they had monks everywhere, and it was the same thing. Monks were allowed to go here and there, and many exemptions. The buses were free, and then they were allowed, they were given, you know, food and begging and stuff like that and so on. And you could even buy, many places when I was there, you could buy a packet, which would have toothpaste, toothbrush, fruits, you know, nuts, everything else to give to a monk like that. And of course, their idea was to acquire merit, you know, and so on. You know, but the police would actually follow monks, you know, this and that. And if they caught a monk with a prostitute, he was denounced, and he would go maybe like for 5 years at hard labor, know, not like you know, this is some kind of, you know, lose, take your clothes and wear regular clothes. No, it was actually, you know, quite, you know, severe, you know, punishment for being a false monk like that. So they knew the people they were getting to. There was some, you know, political description, but also amongst themselves, you know, different monasteries might then criticize other monasteries that were loose in monitoring their monks, you know, like that and so on. So in that respect, when the culture is actually there, then it does create a certain class of people. Prabhupada says, whatever a sannyasi asks for, he should be given. So as soon as I heard that, my mentality automatically responded, yeah, but he's got to carry it. Like that. Okay. Then the mind says, well, you could ask for things that are light, like, you know, diamonds and rubies or gold necklaces, you know. But yeah, but then you'd be killed for them, you know, so on, you know. So there's an automatic control in the system that a sannyasi, you know, just pretty much asks for, you know, what is appropriate to his situation like that, his ashram. And so that way he's protected by the Varnashram system, you know. Yeah. Is it necessary? One question, Gaudidas, he's our local farm director here, Marari Farm. He wrote a little book, and he had this question in it. One of them, is sannyas necessary? So his general conclusion was kind of like it was undesirable, like that. You know, it was better just to stick with the Yuga Dharma of Harinam and, you know, hearing and chanting, and because some arguments, you know. One citation, if the only citation he actually had, is where Prabhupada's talking about how in the Kali Yuga, people should not take sannyas. It's only for people who are very serious, like that. Only very serious, you know. Whereas in other yugas, in Satya Yuga and Dwarpa and Treta, then it's just a very natural part of the culture. Again, if you're born in the Sri Sampradaya from a very early time, your horoscope is done. You come from a good family. Your characteristics are observed. Your phrenology, your features, and so then you may take sannyas at like, you know, 7 years old. You know, 8 years old, you know, and then you're protected. You know, you're put in the position where your position in society, where you for example, you ladies are never, you know, I think as far as I know in the Thai culture, if a monk raises his arms and a lady raises her arms at the same time, their fingers shouldn't touch. So the general etiquette, and everybody's following it, is a lady will never be closer than basically like 6 feet, you know, to a monk, you know, the minimum, like that, you know, you know. And so there's a whole culture where sannyas becomes just a natural part of the psychosocial ambience, you know, brahmacharya. And then if you do enter into grihastha ashram, okay, it's very regulated, very dignified relationship between husband and wife, and very promoting very, very subtle, you know, subtle relationship like that, you know. And then vanaprast, you know, where husband and wife then go through a stage of becoming detached from all this subtle connection, such a subtle connection. You know? And then finally, because that's nyas, there's renunciation in that process of vanaprastha. There's no gross connection, and there'd be different kinds of etiquette and things that are observed. There's no involvement in all the passion of society, you know, where one has to be passionately involved with his wife in terms of, you know, buying the proper clothes for the proper event, you know, and discussing politics with her and this intimate things like that, and so on. You know? So these things are gone, you know, living simply. And then finally, sannyas, complete renunciation. Then the connection is completely gone. And at that point, there will be no separation, you know, because now what happens is that the husband and wife both go to the point where they become civil dead man and civil dead woman, you know. And they come to the point, if they come both to the level of Paramahamsa, which they both have to, you know, formally and informally, at that point, their connection becomes so purified that they know each other's swarup, you know? And it becomes more and more obvious as they go on like that in different levels until finally perfection. And so there is no reason why there should be any separation ever, but it's simply a purification of the process like that, where that one actually finally realizes, you know, your whole self-realization can come by focusing on your wife. And then as you start to see her as servant of the deity, and the beauty has a body, the wife has a body. Then you go on more and more and realizing this is the psychological subtle aspect. You know, the gross body becomes something incidental. And then finally, you realize her or him or its eternal swarup. And, of course, that automatically you realize relationship with Krishna and your relationship with Krishna. You know? So there's nothing wrong with this whole process. And it's a very, very useful process like that. You know? So the question kind of arises, then, now is sannyas necessary? For who? You know, for ladies, not only is it not necessary, if we're talking about the formality, it's actually not encouraged to the extent that actually from Prabhupada's perspective, everything else is prohibited, you know, entering the sannyas ashram, you know. Vanaprastha, yes, you know. But in Nectar of Instruction, right in the very beginning, you know, Prabhupada says that everybody should become a Goswami, and later on, after that, become a pure devotee. So women, children, anybody, everybody, has to first become a Goswami. And that may be formally by taking the external title and following the external process, you know, to promote the internal process, or might be informally, you know, through the process described in terms of your particular psychosocial system like that, psychosocial position, like we see so many people, Draupadi, Kunti, Devahuti. And of course, Devahuti is a very nice example, you know, a complete example of how she achieved becoming a Goswami and then achieved Baba and Prema like that. So for children, okay, is it necessary? If you're going to go directly from Brahmacharya into the next ashram, it seems like it's very good because then, of course, what it does in any stage, it gives you a nice psychosocial ambience to do what you're trying to do internally. It's not that this is it is going to be contrary to the internal development. You know, is Mangalarti necessary? Well, usually yes. That is, it's necessary because we need the external, you know, support to accomplish that. It's not like something contrary to the actual internal development. Actually, in most circumstances, it's complementary. Is it necessary in ISKCON? Is it necessary in ISKCON at the present moment? Is it necessary for Narahari? Is it necessary for Hanuma Preshak? Is it necessary for Ramananda? Is it, yeah, Raghava Pandit? We got a whole list here, you know, yeah. So there's very specific situations. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as far as I understand, you know, never formally, you know, somebody asked him about taking sannyas, and he was already on this level of bhava and everything else where he was just barely conscious of his external circumstances like that, you know. Maybe his young daughter brings him lunch, you know, and says, Dadaji, here's your lunch, you know, something simple. And he's looking at her and just trying to see her spiritual position and everything else like that, you know. And then and she realizes that my uncle doesn't, you know, see my body at all. My uncle's gone, you know, and so on. And he may say Hare Krishna, and she may say Hare Krishna Dadaji, you know, okay, and, yeah. And he kind of notices his lunch came in like that, and then maybe appreciating how it was cooked, the consciousness, you know, and what was cooked for the deities, you know, maybe the desirous of the Mahaprasad, you know, like that for that purpose. You know? So for him, he didn't take it. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, maybe for our ambience, for global preaching. In this sense, outside of India, everything else, you know, Prabhupada, you know, followed it. Prabhupada instituted it, like that. You know, so different times, places, and circumstances. You know, maybe easiest for me to give my own experience in it, like that. I'll give my own experience, and then maybe other people can talk about it from their perspective a little bit. You know, because I think in general, it's something that in ISKCON, what I see, my perspective, my point on the elephant here. Is that, yeah, it should be done, you know. And generally speaking, well, what if everybody took sannyas? There's not enough preaching field. You see, it's unlimited. You can become Gurukula teacher. Prabhupada wanted to do sannyasi to become Gurukula teachers. Unlimited opportunity. Now, I've seen that in a variety of cases. Once you actually get free from the responsibilities, the emotional responsibilities, intellectual responsibilities of, you know, managing your family, your grandchildren, whatever else, you know, Then you discover there's so many things you can do. And in different ways, of course, the ashram provides the facility for moving freely. You haven't got to worry about paying all your hotel expenses. I see now. Devotees here, Nitya Sundar and Dr. Desai and everybody else, they go on Ramapad Swami's parikramas every year. But they're making so many arrangements for, you know, for the hotels and the accommodations, the taxis and everything else involved like that. But as a sannyasi, on the one side, you can expect the support from the ashram. Then, of course, beyond that, Krishna will protect you like that. Krishna will protect you. And Krishna will arrange it. If you're actually doing things, just to execute full freedom in preaching like that, and full freedom in that kind of activity, you know. So cultivating it in ISKCON, I think in ISKCON is lacking this cultivation of sannyas potency, you know. And because of that, we become a little bit in the mode of passion. If you're a real sannyasi, you should not be dependent upon any yatra, any group, any political, you know, faction. So you can freely give your opinion about what's happening, you know, what kind of subtle contaminations are there. What kinds of things are keeping us from becoming a worldwide potent organization like that and so on. When I grew up, came in contact with ISKCON, I had some background, I guess, from previous life. I grew up in a Christian environment, Episcopal church, and I used to like to go to church. I would feel some ecstasy, you know, I was a child hearing the stories like that, you know. Try different things this way, that way, that way, this way. And then finally came in contact with Srila Prabhupada, read his books for 1 year, visited the temple for 1 year, moved in. And then basically as soon as I moved in, it all kind of settled out. My good wife, you know, I have no criticism of her whatsoever. Such a very nice person, you know. But I didn't know what to do exactly. She didn't know what to do exactly. And it was causing such social, you know, problems for her and everything else. So in the end, you know, we separated. Basically, the thing is, you know, my point was that, you know, it was either I was going to have to break the four principles and eat meat, etc., you know, or else, you know, she was going to make both of our lives hell for 20 years. Her attitude, as far as I can tell, was that she wasn't going to become a divorcee, you know, and, you know, that was, but she, in the end, she was going to win. Ladies' war is a war of attrition. So if it took her 20 years of making our lives, both of our lives, a hell, she would do it. And she was going to win. In the end, I would be a normal person like that. So not wanting to, you know, turn everybody into a hellish life, everything else, in the end, I pushed the question and she, filed for a divorce. Okay. Moving into the temple, and basically right away, I was living like Vanaprastha. I was visiting my son sometimes, small child, trying to get him involved. And even, you know, seeing if there could be some reconciliation. Trying very sincerely, you know. So basically went through Vanaprastha process. And then Hansaduda was pushing everybody to take sannyas. So he was our zone lacharya. Okay, I didn't want to. I wanted to stay as a brahmacharya my whole life to avoid all this formality and everything else that's there in the sannyas ashram. It seems kind of contrary to the whole principle. But he was our acharya, and he didn't accept my arguments, and everybody was kind of following the acharyas then. Okay, so I took sannyas. Yeah. Then he had his manifested problems, and so the GBC's decision was anybody who was first and second initiate from Prabhupada, I think it wasn't should, but could continue in the sannyas ashram, you know, like that. If they took shelter of an existing ISKCON Acharya. Okay. So I thought, okay, here's a chance to get out of this, and I was going to go right back into Brahmachari Ashram and continue that format, you know, like Krishna Kshatriya others. I basically what I wanted to do was become a cartoonist for Krishna, wear shorts and t-shirts. That was my idea, my kind of like archetype at that point. You can just do, you know, other things too, maybe, but that would just travel and, you know, yeah, whatever, you know. So, but Trivikram Swami, what's his name? Treya Rishi Prabhu, Bhakti Sarup Dharmadhar Maharaj, Rameshwar Swami, and Tripurari Swami, they're all my local ambience guys. Every single one of them was telling them, no, you took the vows, you should continue. You can do it, and it's a good example for others. That was an argument that came up a lot about why we should take sannyas. Our own benefit, our own whatever, but yes, no. It creates an external formality that a lot of people can appreciate. So if you want to be able to handle a lot of people who haven't quite understood the philosophy yet, but can enter into a position where they're going to class or following the externals and they're going to get, you know, motivated real quick, you need examples, you know, for them. Okay, my committee, I went ahead and continued and took some kind of like confirmation from Bhakti Swarup Damodara Maharaj. And the day of my sannyas initiation in Hyderabad was exactly, maybe, I don't know, it could have been exactly the same day as my first initiation 10 years earlier. 10 years earlier to the day, you know, I took sannyas from Swarup Damodara Maharaj like that. I had a different name under Hansa Duda. I got my Anaprasak name back like that. Yeah. Okay. So then, because of the irregularity, I had to travel all over the place, and I was being tested here and there. Well, was this guy really a sannyasi? And I had to give a lecture in front of Kirtananda's dog staring at me, ready to rip my throat out if I made any mistakes. And I passed Kirtananda's test in Tamal and Bhakti Rupa another time. And it was tough. It was a lot of like, really it was. There was a lot of like testing, you know, and wholesome. So I could say that there really is, I think, a wholesome aspect, qualified aspect in ISKCON to test people, to develop it. And so then what happened, eventually, you know, different things. I could see how I was going through Bahudak, what do you call it, Kurichak, Bahudak, Paribrajak, like that. And hopefully we'll get to Paramahamsa. Because in the beginning I was just living in the yatra in my own little room like that and stuff. You know, taking prasad with devotees, but pretty much just independent. Then I started to get free from being controlled by any one temple. I started traveling around to all the different places in the Bay Area and staying around there and living, sometimes sleeping under trees at night. Pretty cold, pretty frightening, you know. But okay, I'm not going to be anybody's guy. I just want to be able to express my opinion properly. And I got a lot of very, very specific experiences how Krishna was there, you know. Mystical experiences that really, if you're an honest person, you'd accept, yes, there is somebody running this whole show, and I'm supposed to go through this. So eventually that was the whole process, and then, you know, traveling all over the world, it's like, you know, there is. In ISKCON, I think our sannyas culture, my opinion is that we've come advanced in the mode of passion to a large degree, and so that the consideration is that If you're a sannyasi and not a GBC person, you're a minor sannyasi. You're a secondary sannyasi, you know. But my opinion is if you're a sannyasi and a GBC person, in most cases you should look onto this as something you should be getting out of as soon as possible, like that. Yeah. And then the thing about awarding these Bhakti Vedanta degrees to ladies, to men, you know, to grihasthas, you know. Okay, the Bhakti Vedanta diploma should have some indication of the person's spiritual development as well as their academic development, you know. And so then it can be, you know, Bhakti Vedanti or Mila Devi Dasi, you know, Bhakti Vedanta Kandita Devi Dasi. Yeah, then people respect, okay, this lady is on fullest level of realization like that. But she's conducting herself according to her ashram and situation like that. So if she can become my shiksha guru, even though I'm a gentleman, somehow or other, okay. Some lady's my Bhakti Vedanta lady or is my shiksha guru. I have a very, very proper relationship with her husband or sons or whatever. And then she tells me who I should take initiation from. And he agrees, oh, if Bhakti Vedanta Mataji is recommending you, that's sufficient for me. You know, step right over. The fire sacrifice is here. I'll become a diksha guru like that. Go on. So some perspectives on the whole thing. Yadunandan Swami, he did interviews with all the sannyasis in ISKCON as his master's degree thesis. It's harder, by the way, to become a sannyasi than it is. There's more testing to become a sannyasi than it is to become a guru in ISKCON, whatever, you know. So anyway, he did all these things, investigations. He's going to publish it now as a book, which should be very interesting. He's doing everybody like, what's the word, anonymous things, anonymous names, interviewed me. And the sannyasis who fell down, almost invariably, you can even do an age thing, you know. They were all young men who took sannyas in the very beginning. Now that you have to be at least 50 years old or whatever it is, it's almost no fall downs. And all of them were almost 90, it was almost except for one person. They were all like Western, you know, Western-bodied people like that. And the biggest complaint for people, that he got from people, was that it was boring, basically, in the beginning. There was just nothing to do in the beginning, you know. So you wanted some service, some practical, you know, karma yoga, youthfulness, and so on. But I would say now that myself, that that's developed, and so we know, you know, what a sannyasi can do and stuff. We can have a very healthy ashram like that. So I would say in many cases it is desirable. If you're afraid who's going to take care of my wife, you know, and other things like that, then it especially is desirable, because then you'll see, you know, that if you're doing it properly, it's approved by the parampara, that Krishna will take care of your family better than you ever did, like that and so on. Okay, so the four Kumaras are there, and they are Paramahamsas, so they should be allowed to enter Vaikuntha. Okay, thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions, comments, complaints?
Dead.
Donations. I'd like frozen orange juice. Anybody got any frozen orange juice they want to send us?
I have a technical question.
Who's this? Wait a second here. Well, this is
Narhari.
Narhari. Okay. Okay.
Can you mention about the births, a little bit about the births that Jai and Vijay took due to the curse? And you mentioned Jagai and Madhai. I'm not sure that's correct. At least my understanding is that they're in the Satya Yuga, they came as Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, and then in the Treta Yuga, they came as Ravana and Kumbhakarna, and then at the end of the Dwapara Yuga, they came as Shishupal and Dantavakra. I don't think Jai and Vijay, unless it's something I don't know about.
Yeah, I've read it, heard it someplace else like that. It's just like encore. You know, they maybe somebody knows a reference like that. They wanted to participate in Gaura Lila, like that and so on. So they took one more birth like that. So where
it sounds right.
Yeah, I can't.
It sounds
can't
right. I've just never seen it.
Yeah. It maybe Chaitanya Bhagavat or something like that. Yeah. So maybe, you know, it's all I know is I remember, I didn't invent it, you know, but I remember hearing that was the perspective like that and so on. Also, to the character, one of them is a real harsh, aggressive guy, and the other is kind of just the big kind of easygoing, like, loafer who, when he sees the truth, you know, kind of like, hey, don't hit him again, you know. Yeah. Anyway, okay, maybe somebody knows
that.
It
sounds right to me. But yeah, I never remember reading it in Prabhupada's books.
Because, for example, this is the point you got to be careful, because who you're hearing from, everything else. Because on the Brajmanda Parikrama, you know, they to get out, because, you know, all these places in the Lilasthans are not described in so many places in such detail. So, for example, they were taking advantage of the Garga Samhita, which describes a lot of those places like that. And there's a various controversy about, you know, the Garga Samhita. Nobody says it is wrong or evil, you know, but there's a comment that it's not a part of our Sampradaya, you know. But then different people say, well, okay, it mentions Gaura Lila right in the thing, and so on, you know, and so on. So, you know, and also to the point is that, for example, like Jiva Dharma, you know, we're talking about this point. We receive books. You know, it was one quote where Prabhupada says, devotees, Prabhupada's quoting from Jiva Dharma or something, and devotees wanted it or this and that, and Prabhupada said, yes, eventually you will get all these. Okay, like that and so on. So getting them is one thing, but also getting them with the Parampara commentary. Because we can just say that Hari Bhakti Vilas by Sanatana Goswami is from Sanatana Goswami. You know, so we can read it. But there's a direct citation. I remember what Prabhupada says, that the Hari Bhakti Vilas is unnecessarily ritualistic, you know. But he says that because at that time when Sanatana Goswami wrote it, almost everybody was a smart Brahmin. And he said, therefore, he had to go with the flow of the, for the flow of the time, like that. So therefore, we're receiving the Hari Bhakti Vilas, but we're receiving it with the perspective and the commentary of like that. So again, maybe Jiva Dharma, Prabhupada may have gone through it, and maybe he may have had like, you know, two pages of comments total for the entire thing. Necessary for what he thought were corrections in terms of our understanding, our misunderstandings like that. You know what the word pan means, right, Narhari, in Spanish?
Bread.
Yeah. So one lady at the Sunday feast in Guayaquil, maybe about 40 years old, doing the questions and answers, she said, you know, I've been coming to your movement now for a month, and it's so wonderful. It's changed my whole life, and everything is so nice. You know, but I have a really big problem with becoming a devotee. I said, what's that? And she said, well, because I have a bakery. Well, okay, so what? He says, well, because in your books it says that bread is fulfilling illicit desires. Like that. So, no, it doesn't. So she opened the Upanishad and it says right there, you know, one fulfills illicit desires by opium, marijuana, LSD, haritaki, and pan. So we had to make a parampara explanation to her of what, you know, of what that is. You know, it's not, that's a different kind of pan, but it, yeah. So same way, you know, reading these books by other people, but if we got the perspective on Prabhupada's books, like Madan saying, you feel, wait a second, that's not what Prabhupada says, and this and that and so on. Prabhupada probably would have said something about this point, you know, so on. Yeah. So, other books. But I'm hearing it someplace. I remember it was like maybe Lokanath Maharaj was reading it or something like that. When something like from a little Brihad Bhagavatam, I'm say, but a Chaitanya Mangala or something. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Any other Bhakti Luciano.
Maharaj, I have a question. If you can hear me, all right.
Hello.
Maharaj, can you hear me?
Yes, just talk from your diaphragm.
That's easier said than done. You know, I remember a long time ago I saw a cartoon. It was two angels sitting on a cloud playing harps, and one of them said, I wish I would have brought a magazine. In other words.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like boring up. There's nothing to do. So... we had this description a few verses back about how the ladies, they in Vaikuntha, they try and clean the walls, but there's no dust. It's only Chintamani. And then we have Jai and Vijay, who they're doorkeepers, but nobody can enter the kingdom of God. Yeah, if they have any. So wouldn't that be kind of like the same kind of thing? There's nothing really to do.
No, I've heard that there is dust, but it's exactly for that purpose, so the ladies have something to do or something, you know? Yeah, yeah. Somebody asked, Snow. Prabhupada never had seen snow, so he ran out, he was looking at it or something like that. And yeah, somebody asked Prabhupada if they had snow in Vaikuntha, and Prabhupada laughed and said, if they want it, you know, like that and so on. So everything can be there, you know, all these different activities and so forth. And the material world is a part of the spiritual world. So if you want to have these like brawl scenes and all this kind of stuff, they can have it, you know. They can play. They can go to the material world. And for them, of course, it's just, you know, it's play in different ways like that and so on. You know. So Mark Twain said exactly the same thing. He said, most people in this world can't get a single darn note of any kind of quality out of any musical instrument. And the highest pleasure in this material world is sex. So the biggest people in the material world will risk everything, name, fortune, everything else for that, you know, and so on. And so the Christian message is that there's no sex in heaven, and all you do is sit around playing a harp like that. And not even a decent ragtime band, you know, so on. So he said, the current Christian idea of heaven makes the devil's work, you know, very easy. Yeah. But that's the point. We have to discuss it. Anything that's fun in this world, okay, going to the supermarket and you know, looking through all the things you can get, you know, for your deities in the supermarket, you know, whatever else, or something like that. Yeah, that's a desire tree. It's just like a tree, a forest of desire trees. Every single one is saying, no, pick this. No, 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 that guy. Don't listen to that fool. I have better things over here. Come over here. Look at this. I got, you know, 16 kinds of frozen juice. You can make popsicles out of them. Oh, okay. No, no, no. So everything fun in this world is there, but it's more and more fun the more purified sense. So that's the point too. I don't know. There must at some point. The giant Vijay. They must be doing something, you know. And I don't think that they're trying to like harass people, but they're trying to tell them, hey, you know, you've got to like go over and get purified here, you know. They impress upon people. They understand that they're not. It's not appropriate for them to go in, and people feel, okay, yeah, you're right. You know? So where can I get purified? Well, go over there between the sixth and the seventh gate. There's this whole place of learning austerities and purification like that. Oh, so glad to see you made it. Come on, like that. Everybody's been watching you from the gateways of Vaikuntha. People are looking out to see if people are finishing off their austerities. You're sitting there cheering for them. Come on, finish it. Do it. Do it. Like that. Oh, okay. Come on, hurry up. We've been waiting for you. We've been holding the boat. You're gonna get in. So, okay. Do you want to go? One Christian preacher. Yeah, he was talking. Yeah, he was talking. He was trying to get everybody, encouraging everybody to go back to the, you know, to heaven. And he asked how many people wanted to go, and half the people raised their hand. So he went at it again, and after some time, and the second group, maybe like 75% raised their hand. So he just tore into it even more, and finally getting everybody to go to heaven. And finally, everybody in the room raised their hand wanting to go to heaven, but one person. So finally he said, Brother Joseph, what is it? You know? He said, don't you want to go to heaven? And Brother Joseph said, well, Pastor, you know, you're talking about it, and I'd really like to go. But the way you're talking about it, it seems like you're talking about it today. So, brothers and sisters, go take your Kool-Aid. James Jonestown, this is the last sadhu sangha we'll have. Everybody going to leave their body today and go to Vaikuntha. Hare Krishna. So, nice to have seen it at the sangha here, and it's glad that this is the very last one, and we'll see you all in Goloka. Hare Krishna.
Oh, Maharaj, are you still there?
Thank you, Maharaj. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Well, looks like Maharaj left.
it was quite an exit. Interesting exit.
Yeah.
I think he went to Vaikuntha.
I thought he was choking.
No, I think he actually left. We might need to look for somebody else for next week.
Well, if that's the case, then... Boy, thank you all for attending. Ramananda, you sound a little bit better. That's encouraging. And I guess
Ramananda,
we look forward to...
I hope you feel better, Ramananda.
Thank you. All right, thank you, Prabhu. How do you go? How do you go? How do you go? How do you go?
Thank you,
Krishna.
Thank you,
Krishna.